When Jonas is 15 years old, a boy around his age, a stranger, comes to his rural Danish village to live. He stands out. Jonas discovers a few things about this boy. He has no family, he's been placed in foster care, and he comes from Afghanistan. The two boys become friends, but Jonas always has this sense that there is a mystery to his friend. Parts of his story he doesn't know, like where is his family? How has he ended up here in this village? But his friend doesn't want to talk about it, and so Jonas doesn't push. It isn't until many years later that his friend agrees to tell his story. As long as his name and identity has changed, and so Jonas in response creates a documentary. But to protect his friend, Jonas uses a mixture of animation and real footage. The end result is the film Flea, released last year. Jonas tells the story of his friend whom he calls Amin, who shares with him what it was like to grow up in Afghanistan in the 1980s. It was a fairly normal childhood, though Amin's father was in jail as a political prisoner. When the Soviet Union leaves the country in 1989, things begin to fall apart. Civil war breaks out with the Taliban gaining power. It's not safe for Amin and his family, and so they flee. Flee to Russia on a tourist visa, carrying nothing more than a backpack each with them. They find accommodation in a small unit, but they can't stay permanently in Russia. There's no food, Russia is struggling, and when their visa runs out, they are considered illegals. Thankfully, there is an older brother living in Sweden, working as a cleaner, and he uses all of his savings to arrange for the rest of the family to be smuggled across the Russian border into Europe. Amin's sisters are smuggled first, locked in cargo containers and placed on ships. They spend days and days in darkness. Sometimes when the containers are finally open, people have died. It is that brutal. But thankfully, Amin's sisters make it to Sweden safely. Amin, his second brother, and his mother are next. They walk through dark, wintry woods and then onto a boat crammed in below, once more, darkness. There is a storm, and the boat starts to leak. They get picked up by the authorities and taken back to Russia. One more time, enough money for a last opportunity. Amin is chosen. He gets onto a plane that heads to Denmark. And there he's finally recognized as a refugee. He tells them he has no family left. So Amin settles in a Danish village and becomes friends with Jonas. There are a lot of staggering numbers I could give about how many refugees there are in the world. Too many people are forced to flee their country because of war or persecution or other serious instability. People have to make this terrible choice to stay and risk it or to risk and leave. Both options could end up in death or just limbo, stuck in a camp or someplace where you're not recognized as a citizen or even a person. But numbers can be too abstract compared to hearing a real person tell you their real story, saying, "This happened to me." I want us to remember real people as we talk about refugees today. This term, we've been exploring ethics around food, and in the last few weeks, we've been focusing on hospitality. We've talked about how hospitality in the Bible was a key practice for the people of God, and it meant caring for the stranger. 2 weeks ago, we talked about what it looks like to care for the stranger traveling and on holidays. Last week, we saw hospitality can also be expressed when we care for the stranger who is sick or injured. Now, all this is familiar to us, but meeting a refugee can be rarer. This is someone who finds themselves displaced and having to start over in a completely different country and also often culture. This can be the experience of immigrants in general, right? They are strangers in a new place, but the refugee has the added burden of having fled, ripped from their country. They probably can never go back. When we think about biblical hospitality, we see that it addresses not just the tourist or the sick, but also the displaced person. The Bible doesn't just have stories of individuals showing care to strangers like Abraham and Sarah. But when Israel is being formed into a nation, they are given laws from God, and a lot of these laws call Israel to care for the alien. An alien is a stranger, meaning someone not from the Israelite ethnic community. The word refugee doesn't exist in the Bible, but basically that's what an alien often was. Someone who'd been displaced from their own community because of war or maybe drought and had to flee in order to survive. You might think of the story of Naomi, who flees Israel and heads to Moab because of a drought in the land. She becomes a stranger, an alien in Moab. And then, after 10 years there, further tragedy strikes. She eventually returns back to Israel, having lost most of her family, apart from her Moabite daughter-in-law, Ruth, who commits to Naomi out of love to the point of embracing Naomi's God Yahweh. Ruth is willing to become a stranger. Without family connections, you are extremely vulnerable, and often in the ancient world, aliens would end up as cheap labor, open to exploitation and abuse. Actually, this is not just the ancient world, this is still the reality today. God instructs the people of Israel to act differently towards strangers. They're to treat the alien like they would treat other citizens. They were to do this because part of Israel's own experience had been fleeing and seeking help in Egypt when famine hit and experiencing not care, but abuse and exploitation. God saved them and became their refuge. In the book of Ruth, we see Ruth settling in Israel. We see how vulnerable she is, but we also see the laws of God in action. She can glean from fields and get food. One of the fields she gleans from is Boaz. He's heard her commitment to her mother-in-law and is moved. He praises her, saying, "May Yahweh reward you for your deeds, and may you have a full reward from Yahweh, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge." This is one of the images that we see repeated throughout the Bible. God is described as having wings which can wrap around you and keep you safe. God is a refuge for anyone who would come and seek shelter, a refuge for Israel, but also a refuge for a foreigner like Ruth, who then becomes welcomed and part of God's community. Hospitality was to be embedded into the very fabric of the nation of Israel. There's this brilliant book by two Australian brothers, Mark and Luke Glenville. One's a theologian, the other works more on policy and international relations, and together they argue that in the ancient world, kinship was essential. You relied on your family, not just nuclear, but extended. You had clans and tribes, your people group, that you could turn to when in need. And what God does in these laws he gives is kind of push Israel to think wider, to extend that kinship at a national level to include outsiders. So we see biblical stories celebrating people like Ruth, who transform from stranger into kin. Now, we don't have very strong kinship networks now. Maybe we have a nuclear family, but a lot of the emphasis now is on the individual to make it alone. So individuals might say, "I don't need a people, a nation. I love the whole world and can go anywhere." That love is broad and often meaningless, and you need a lot of privilege to be able to live that way. Others might say, "I just care for me and those closest to me. Maybe my nation, but kind of nobody beyond that." The Bible challenges both these perspectives, and here's a quote from Mark and Luke Glenville. "The biblical model of human relations does not recommend an abstract and rootless cosmopolitanism that denies the value of local communal identities, affinities, and loyalties. But neither does it endorse an inward-looking and exclusivist communitarianism that denies the imperative to care for vulnerable outsiders. It insists that communities be outward-looking, caring for outsiders as well as their own, marked by a desire to embrace and enfold as kin that stranger in need." Mark and Luke ask, what could Australia be if it was inspired by this biblical vision and saw care of strangers as part of what it means to be a good nation? What could it look like if Christians were able to celebrate the particularities of their nation and also be outward looking, like Israel was trying to do? Last year, Christians from across the political and theological spectrum joined together calling for our government to increase the number of Afghan refugees into our country. This was partly motivated by the horrifying images we were seeing on our screens, and also by a sense of obligation to a country where we have had an active military presence for a number of years. And it's motivated out of our faith, hearing God's call to care for strangers and responding. The church is looking outward, saying we can embrace and enfold strangers into our country, and we will be enriched doing so. Ruth joining Israel enriched the nation. Ammon has enriched Denmark. This is the blessing of welcoming strangers. We are enriched by them. Just before Christmas, I joined a prayer vigil online where Christians and Muslims gathered to talk about the situation in Afghanistan before we prayed. One of the women, Miriam, shared her story. She was a refugee like Ammon, fleeing Afghanistan in the 1980s, except she happened to end up in Australia, coming by plane. She was 7 years old. She speaks about how she was enfolded and embraced. And here's a quote from her. Coming to a new foreign land is never easy. But I remember the warmth of my ESL teacher, Mrs. Brown, at Penrith South Public School. She made us, all of us, feel welcome. She helped teach me to speak English, but unbeknown to her, she did more than that. She effectively taught me to believe in myself. Now, Miriam is a lawyer, a human rights advocate, a writer and CEO of Media Diversity in Australia. She was cared for, and now she cares for others. When we're willing to care for strangers, we'll find often that we are enriched. Hospitality can happen on a national level. Christians can ask, what are the policies and laws we can advocate and call on our governments to adopt that encourages care for strangers, particularly the vulnerable like refugees? That campaign of Christians advocating for more refugees put pressure on the government, who responded by agreeing to lift the number of refugees from Afghanistan. Praise God. There's a role for governments to play in caring for the stranger, and Christians can gently but persistently remind governments of this role. And there's also a role for the local church to show hospitality to real people in need. We don't just leave it up to the government. This care of strangers doesn't just appear in the Old Testament. Jesus, in a similar way, challenged some of the kinship models of his day when he calls people to become his disciples and leave their familiar kinship networks behind. One of the shocking things he says is recorded for us in Mark's Gospel, Mark 3:32. A crowd was sitting around him and they said to him, "Your mother and your brothers and sisters are outside asking for you." And he replied, "Who are my mother and my brothers?" And looking at those who sat around him, he said, "Here are my mother and my brothers. Whoever does the will of God is my brother and sister and mother." Jesus challenges the kinship networks, calling people to leave kin behind and be part of God's kinship network, one that is not determined by blood, but by those who do the will of God. The question then becomes, well, what is the will of God? We see God's will in the life of Jesus. Jesus heals and invites outcasts back into community. He eats with strangers and sinners. He cares for the vulnerable. He even has friendships with people outside of Israel and calls them into this new kinship group. He is constantly enfolding and embracing a whole range of people into his group and calling them family, kin. This is the work the church is still called to engage in today. We look to Jesus and see what God wills. We see Jesus' welcome, particularly of the stranger and the vulnerable, and we seek to do likewise. Sometimes the nation state might be slow to act or might not act at all. Not all Australians are Christians, and Australia is not ancient Israel. It's not a nation seeking to live God's laws. But the church is meant to be a community of people who've embraced the welcome and love of God in Jesus Christ. We are people who find refuge under God's wings. The church is to continue the mission of Jesus, embracing and enfolding the stranger, like the refugee. And maybe if lots of churches did this, our nation would be moved and prompted to get more involved in doing this on a larger scale as well. I mentioned this opportunity in the weekly email the last few weeks, and I've spoken briefly about it before, but let me mention it one more time. A new scheme has opened up. calling for local communities to be involved in helping refugees resettle in Australia. It's inspired by a similar program that has been running in Canada for some time now, and it means Australia could have the capacity to resettle more people in the future. It's relying on local communities to get involved. The first refugees have just landed in Sydney. 10-year-old George, his younger sister and parents are one of the first to arrive, coming out of war-torn Syria. Although George hasn't spent much of his life in Syria, but in refugee camps. A group from Gosford Anglican were there to meet him and his family at the airport, bringing soft koalas and chocolate as gifts to welcome them to Australia. This group will help George and his family as they navigate life in Australia, how to open a bank account, how to enrol in school, how to find a place to stay. One of the organisers from Gosford Anglican says, "We can't solve the problems of the world, but we can reach out and help a single refugee family where we can. And already it is bringing our local community even closer together." This is one concrete way we can respond and practice hospitality. I don't know if anyone feels prompted to do this here in Seaforth. I know two people expressed maybe interest. But when I see this, I think, yes, this is God at work. There's so much pain involved in fleeing your country, so much loss that I wonder how do people pick up the pieces and keep going? Often they can because a stranger reaches out and cares. And sometimes a stranger can become a friend. Sometimes a stranger can enrich you. You seek to bless them, only to discover they are blessing you.